Architecture with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hi, and welcome to Robots episode 112. I'm Sabine, and today we'll explore the use of robots in construction with architect Matthias Kohler. But first, let's have a look at the news with Christine.
Since the introduction of submarines into nations' navies, submarine warfare has been a complex game of underwater hide-and-seek. A new DARPA contract, now awarded to the Science Applications International Corporation, is set to change that. Under the contract, it will design, develop, and conduct sea trials of an unmanned submarine that is capable of tracking enemy vessels for thousands of kilometers. The vision is that once spotted, an enemy submarine could be consistently tracked and followed by a small unmanned robot submarine. DARPA has also followed an interesting approach to developing suitable control strategies and war tactics. Rather than solely relying on current know-how, it has released an online game, complete with immersive graphics and leaderboards that allow anyone to try to track and overcome common evasion strategies used by submarines, with the hope of gleaning new successful strategies from game players. The first sea trials of the unmanned robot submarines are scheduled between the second and third quarter of 2015. Researchers at KTH Stockholm have developed a browser tool that allows anyone to create 3D models using Microsoft's popular Kinect sensor. The goal of the Kinect at Home project is to accumulate many examples of common household objects. The resulting large amounts of data will be made available to other robot and computer vision researchers. In addition, the data can also be pre-processed stored in online knowledge databases. By providing object models via the cloud, the researchers hope that robots will be better able to recognize everyday objects such as a sofa, a chair, or a refrigerator. For more information on the new robot submarine or for the Kinect at Home project, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Professor Matthias Kohler from the ETH Zurich is an expert in digital design and robotic fabrication and architecture. Kohler and his colleagues drive the development and use of robots that directly operate on construction sites. The next generation of these robots may even be able to make design decisions during construction. Per met up with Matthias Kohler and spoke to him about the evolution of robotic fabrication and architecture and the difference robots may make to the future of building design.
So today we're going to speak about automated construction and automation in architecture. So welcome. Could you tell me a bit about how you got into the automated architecture thing? We might talk about architecture and robotics separately later, but how did you get into the combination of the two?
Yes, at the ETH Zurich, we started doing research on architecture and digital fabrication. At that involved the question of what kind of research equipment that we would need to do this research. And so we thought, you know, instead of buying specialized equipment such as a mill or a laser cutter, which very much limits you in the kind of scope of work that you do, we wanted to invest in a more generic machine, a machine which can be customized and adapted to do various different material, let's say, tasks. That's how we got into looking into robots. And we finally decided to buy an industrial robot on a linear axis, which allowed us not only to kind of access quite a big workspace, but also to come close to something which is very close to the nature of architecture itself. It's the fact that with this machine, we could now also assemble parts. We could additively build up structures. And if you look at architecture, this is very much a feature of architecture, that it is added from smaller parts, which then start to define space and make our living environments.
Mm-hmm. I see that. That's very interesting that we assemble from small parts versus the machining from a big block to a smaller part, which is just totally different.
Correct.
So we're very well versed in doing automated production for one, but we have no clue on how to do it in this other spectrum where we assemble many small things. What is your research aim now? Where are you going?
Well, it is very much about finding out how those new production techniques, such as robotic fabrication, do actually influence the design of architecture itself. So on the one hand, that leads to kind of, let's say, new robotic developments and new material processes on the one hand side. On the other hand, that also leads to changes in the culture of how we design with those processes. Because each time, also in the history of architecture, that, for example, a material system changed, the design of architecture would also change and would take into account the new possibilities, the new performances, for example, of a new material system. Now we think with robotics and the digital computational techniques that are at the hands of today's designers, there is a very substantial change in the design of architecture.
Mm-hmm. Like we see in buildings from which time they come, how they're built.
I mean, a
Gothic cathedral has one shape, a brick building has another shape, a wood structure has another shape. And you're looking into what kind of shapes, what kind of possibilities do we have with this new way of doing things?
Yes, exactly. We're actually talking of something, the term that we use is a kind of a digital materiality. It's a thesis that today matter that architecture is built from, or the materiality of architecture, is not the same as it used to be. It's not just the materials and the way that you assemble them, but it's those materials get enriched by digital information today. So a concrete wall isn't just a concrete wall like it used to be. Now it can be refined by interwoven, let's say, features within the building process, which are actually features that come from computational control or from the robotic processes used. So we think that the very kind of, let's say, material substance of architecture is about to change, which then leads into new questions of architectural materialization, and might even lead to new modular systems or different concepts that will be our future.
Mm-hmm. What kind of issues do you think that we're going to face? Modular architecture has been around in different shapes or forms, especially in the kind of experimental field, for quite some time. Can you tell us a bit about the old way of doing modular construction and automated construction, and how we can move forward? Because right now we're building in the old school way still. We're not using automated production. Why did the old school fail? Which are them, and why did they fail?
Well, there are different old schools that I would have to refer to. Let's say there is an old school of, modular building, which did very interesting concepts and some very interesting realizations also in buildings. But usually the idea was that it would be very economical systems that could be easily adapted to different uses, easily maybe also reconfigured, etc. But what can be seen throughout the history is that usually they had been one-offs as building systems. So they have been used once, but then usually not carried on. So which made it kind of, to some degrees, they were also failures. Then a second, line or historic line is the use of automation in construction. There have been, for example, early buildings in Japan where robotic construction was already being tested out. They have been welding steel structures together in high-rise constructions. There, the idea was basically to replace humans by robots, so increase efficiency and increase safety on the on the construction side, which worked also partially, but the initial costs of development versus the gains in construction were relatively limited. So now what changes today with regards to those, let's say, two historic developments is that technology today becomes much more software-driven. It becomes adaptive. So if we use a robot today, it doesn't need to repeat the same task over and over again. You know, like if you look at car factories, usually a robot does the same movement 24 hours a day. Today, it doesn't need to be the case anymore. So if we look at, let's say, a kind of architectural robotics, a robot can do an individual task with an individual work pieces each time. And that's actually two developments of the computational techniques behind the robotic parts. And that is very interesting to architecture. It means modular concepts and also automation concepts in the construction industry can be revisited from a very flexible point of view. So suddenly those technologies can offer a large diversity of uses and applications.
Yeah, because the robot itself is more autonomous and the digital information already comes from a CAD system, so it could just implement what we've drawn in the computer in the old sense. It just was very painstakingly programmed to do one specific thing.
Exactly, yeah. And now basically this interface from a CAD environment is very direct. So if I draw a line in the CAD program, it can become the explicit information to basically make a robotic movement, right? Or to build something.
Which is borrowing from the CNC routing that you started with.
Yes, exactly.
Because it reads the module and then we do this for construction now instead.
But of course today in architectural design, or more specifically, in computational design in architecture, we go a step further. We not only, draw a CAD model as a static model, but we also start to literally design the processes that the robot work with. For example, we can design behavior of the robots. We recently did a semester where students did a kind of landscape design, and the robot was depositing sand. And the students, they were not only assigning the robot how to deposit sand, but they were also measuring what formations they built, and then had the robot to readjust to their design intentions. So here, basically, the architect does not design the final form, but he designs the process, the behavior of the robotic behavior, which then results in final form, which the architect authors. So these are very big shifts for the profession of architecture that we're talking
about. So that's emergent by design, the way most of the natural environment we see around us is emergence from a very basic, simple set of rules gives you any kind of advanced flowers or animals. So.
Exactly. And the fact that we are now at the point in history where we can start to deliberately design those processes, so they don't need to be, just random bottom-up grown results, but we can actually discuss and design those rules and see if they perform better or worse, simulate that and also build that physically. That is quite an exciting phase.
Yeah, certainly, because it's also so that it's harder to do that in one way, but it's also easier to do it in a bigger way because you don't have to deal with all the small parts in the end. The devil is in the detail, we usually say. If we get good at doing these instructions, we could emerge very complicated structures and behaviors in quite a simple way.
That's correct. And on the other hand, we also have to account for the inherent complexity in architecture itself. If you think on how many functions that architecture has to accommodate, it will be quite a tricky task and an interesting field of research also to see how, such bottom-up rule-based design strategies come together with the kind of, top-down demands that we all have on architecture. Yeah. Right?
How do we actually get what we want?
Yes.
Yeah.
By designing rules. That's not so straightforward. But that's one of the researches that at least our students in our design courses are doing. For example, right now we are here at the Future City Laboratory at the SEC in Singapore. And here the students are designing 40-story high high-rises by designing the rules that build them. And they build them, those high-rises, with robotic systems that allow them to build a 1-to-50 model of those high-rises. So those are going to be 3-meter high models, which are physically built, and the students have to make sure they stand up, you know, they hold up, they become interesting in terms of architecture, but they make use of the unique features that robots and the digital control give them in their design.
Yeah, and this also gives us a scale, but still a good test, and gives us experience with answers to certain questions, but it might also give us new questions that we need to answer before we go out and do it in full scale. Have you had any of those revelations where you say that, okay, before we go to full scale, we probably have to solve this, whatever it is?
No, we have a lot of questions popping up almost every day. but it's very exciting and very challenging, actually, this field. I think, actually, currently the research that we initiated 5 years ago starts to trigger almost like a field that I would call architectural robotics. So the question, how do actually robotic systems and morphologies, how will they have to develop in the future so that architecture can make use of them? I mean, we're not robotic engineers, we are architects. So at one point, this is not our, let's say, main field of research, but I would welcome other people to join this research, maybe with different backgrounds of knowledges. So, I mean, when we start this research, we were very much we were basically building up a prefabrication cell, you know, which was using a robot. Then those kind of imminent questions arise. Well, if we build architecture with robots, probably the robot is not going to be larger than the architecture that we build, right? Yeah. So probably the robot will still remain smaller, which means, well, okay, the robot either stays in the prefabrication, and we have a prefabrication plant very much as we build cars now today.
They off-site, build, so to speak.
Architectural components. But the other option, which we started to look into and which I find relevant also in robotic terms, is that we actually have to start thinking about robots that are actually smaller than the artifact that they're working on. So they're actually robotic agents that are on the building site and are actually building the piece, the larger piece on site. They're collaborating to work with material systems. So they become like a systemic whole. And I think we ventured into this direction quite a bit, and that will be certainly one way how those, let's say, model scale research that we do here in Singapore will be able to translate. Another very interesting path that we've chosen to look at that was in a recent collaboration with Professor Raffaello D'Andrea, also from the ETH Zurich, is to look at building with flying machines. So imagine kind of, let's say, an aerial construction method for architecture, which of course entails a lot of questions, for example, about the material systems that you build with, because most probably then you would like to have materials which are lightweight, you know, easy to transport, which can fit even if the precision of the position is not so perfect, because in the air it's quite difficult, you know, to get at, let's say, a millimeter accuracy. So that entails a large sum of questions which are highly interesting, I think, both from, let's say, an engineering perspective, and that's our main perspective, from an architectural perspective, because they most probably will, those buildings will start to look different than the buildings we see today out here.
How do you? I mean, many people that listen to the podcast, they come from the robotics field. And I think that one interesting question is, how can we help you? What do you find challenging coming from the architectural point of view? Where do you think we could contribute as roboticists?
Well, I think definitely the kind of, let's say, collaborating agent systems in robotics are interesting. The question how they can orient in, let's say, on a building site. If you imagine a building site, and maybe it's even a bit a messy building site, right? Maybe there are even humans on the building site. Just thinking in it in terms of flexibility, it would be very interesting to have robots which are, capable of dealing with, certain unorderly environments, but still can continue on their task and share with other robotic colleagues what they're about to do, and actually start to start to assemble a building. What is very an important question to the robotic field is, how can they do that at the scale of architecture? Because if you look at architecture, there's certain, for example, we have room heights which we need to achieve. So a room is maybe 3 to 4 meters high. So what could be an adequate robotic system being able to operate at that very scale? Because we find it often that robotic experiments, which are very interesting, are being conducted at a very small scale. Mm-hmm. And they're, in our view, they're not so easy to transpose to architectural scale. And I think that is a tricky question to the robotics people. To what degree are those systems and principles they're working on scalable? And how would that be done in a clever, subtle way without starting to create like a monster robots, which we're all afraid of being able of lifting tons of materials.
Mm. So what I'm thinking is that the current industrial robots we see, they're built for really for reasonably small scope of operations, maybe a few meters, and they're also built for very high precision.
Yes.
What architecture needs is a robot that can build with a very large working space, but not necessarily with the thousands of a millimeters in precision. So you want kind of the same, but a different robots, larger working space, but small. You don't require the same repeatability.
Yes, I mean, if you look at current building sites, you have tolerances of 1-2 centimeters, which are kind of usual. I think it is a possibility for architecture and for robotics in architecture to embrace this fact and say, well, maybe we don't even need to go, to the super precise mechanical tolerances. And that therefore, I think that could release the robotics from some pressure in that area. But it also means we need material systems that can deal with that. If you have super precise machined parts that you want to fit, then they call for zero tolerance, right? So that's a lot of development to be done also from the constructive side of architecture.
Mm-hmm. So one thing we're trying to do there is also replace the super expensive but very high precision machines with more software.
Yes.
that can read its environment and adapt rather than be stupid and not because I think that works in the industrial setting, but it probably doesn't work in the architectural setting, because we have a very messy world, as you say, and we have to have a system that takes in the world and adapts to it. And that's also might be better than to go high precision from the beginning, because that only works in the industrial environment that's very controlled.
In an ideal setting, in a world which is 300 years from now, we could obviously speculate on a fully automated, robotically built architecture, etc., without any humans on site, etc. I'm a bit too much of a realist and maybe a bit constrained by that, because today I see about 25 professions usually on each building site cooperating, right? Humans and some machines. And I think it would be very interesting to just start to inject
26th, if you may.
Yeah, 26th or 23rd, 20th, replace some of the workmanships by robots, slowly showing that they can actually take part in those constructions without basically having to decide immediately if it's a robotic building site or a human building site. So why not having that run in parallel? Yeah. And that calls for a kind of, let's say, quite a flexible robotics, which can also cooperate with humans.
Understand humans and also be safe to work around and know their own limitations so that the system stops when it doesn't understand things and stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So I think the roboticists have a lot to contribute to architecture. And
there's one more topic which I would like to mention. This is more a bit on a technical term, but a big question is also kind of localization. So how do, imagine there's a building site and certain stuff is built, other stuff isn't built yet. So how do robots now know where they can continue building? What is their reference, you know? Because there's no setup with an ideal, point of references which are already available. Basically, they would need to recalibrate themselves continuously with the information that they already have at hand. That, I think, is also quite a challenging task.
Yeah, because that also comes to optimization. I mean, the simple thing would be just to put one brick on top of the next and then the next, but yeah, that might take an inordinate amount of time. If, as you say, each robot could look at the construction site, look at what others, humans and other robots are doing and say, if I do this, this is totally the most, overall, the most efficient thing I can do.
That would be, let's say, optimal.
Yeah. But if you just could determine that this is what I could do, I wouldn't be in the way of the humans or other robots. And this is a part I could work on. Because building sites, in comparison to the industry, they're very messy. They're very unstructured.
Exactly. I mean, also, it is one very easy thing to do. You know, there's certain things robots are really good at and certain things humans are really good at. So robots can also make use of the humans that are around, right? So I think that eases the robotic part a bit. You know, humans can very directly give certain information to robots, which would be very hard for robots to find out. But I think in this kind of cooperation, at least in the next, let's say, 10 years, it would be interesting that robotics make an advance, because then they can demonstrate that it's really feasible. If we stick on, let's say, pure robotic systems without humans, it will be very hard to push it through the reality of architecture.
Yeah.
That's a bit my point. Yeah. And then, of course, but that's more like, let's say, the engineering part. Then, of course, the interesting question, which I would also ask the robotics people maybe to come up with ideas and concepts is, okay, how can that contribute to the design and the constructive systems of architecture? You know, there might be very interesting ideas also coming up from your fields, which might be very inspiring to architecture and vice versa.
I guess what one thing is natural for a roboticist is the active thing. A robot is active. It goes out there, it senses the world, it makes computation, and then it takes action.
Yeah.
Buildings usually don't do that. They don't sense what you need, and then they don't do computation, and then they don't take action.
Correct.
You rather have to go turn the light on or adjust the temperature and stuff. They don't feel you're hot, say, he's probably hot, let's turn the AC up.
Yep.
So that's maybe a thing that could come from this. Say that we, so as you said, 10, 15, whatever years it takes from now, have this. Could you tell me what kind of new dream buildings you would build with this system and how they differ from what we're building today? What is the end product of this? As an architect now, you don't have to worry about the robotic side, it just works. Describe the building you would build with this.
Well, it's a good question because this is actually very much of a research question also. That's why we have architecture students and also us in our office actually do designs with those technologies. I think those buildings are much more differentiated than today's, for example, large buildings. Today you often have a very homogeneous and repetitive buildings, and I think in the future they can become much more diverse and differentiated, while still in their core being quite systematic. You know, they have a kind of logical order to it, yet at the same time, they're very diverse. They're like, let's say, a bit living organisms in the sense of a material formation.
All trees look basically the same, but none of them are identical.
Yeah, for example, yeah. And I think there are really new expressions. Also, I mean, we've been talking a bit of modular architecture before. I think the question of modularity might come back in architecture again, not in the sense of a strict repetition of a modular system, but more in a actually quite open and flexible modular concepts which create really very different environments. One example, the recent exhibition that we did together with Raffaella and Andrea and those flying quadcopters, there we invented a kind of super module. This super module was 30 meters by 18 meters in plan dimension and 10 meters height. There was a huge module which could accommodate, for example, a cinema, but it could also accommodate 4 to 6 flats, you know, it could accommodate all kind of different functionalities. And it has been assembled in a way to a mega structure, actually a 600 meter high vertical village for 30,000 inhabitants in a very, let's say, varied way and formation, which makes it really a new proposal on the architectural side. Yet the concept was that each of those modules would be fabricated in a kind of field factory on site, and each one would internally be completely different, but from the outside it would look somewhat the same. So I think there are new scales and concept of modularity that will now be probed with those new technologies. That's just one example.
Should we talk a bit about like the certification process? Because I guess architectures are just so used to always have that in the back of their minds. This is the building code for where I'm working. I adapt my work to it. I don't think the roboticists are very good at that.
Yeah, it's true. That's a fact of architecture, that you adapt to your local building codes. But there's differences in building codes. There are building codes that are more on the usage of the terrain, etc. So they're more or less independent, let's say, of the construction technologies that you use. But then there are certain building codes, like earthquakes, etc., which relate which relate very much to the construction.
Because robots have an advantage there over humans is that when you actually taught them to do something, they will actually do exactly that. The quality control is one thing.
There is an advantage and there is a problem. The advantage is exactly what you mentioned, that the kind of, let's say, for example, safety on a job site can actually be improved with robots because you have a protocoled operation. You can have maybe less humans on the job site, or you can ensure the quality by doing kind of quality assessment while the robots build. You have another kind of problem because classically building materials are certified that you use in a building, but they're certified for a standard use case. And I think what we're talking about in the future that architecture is going to take, materials are going to be much more adapted and customized or maybe modularized. That's going to be seen. And there will probably be the need for new kind of certification standards for non-standard systems, which are really heavily, let's say, can be well pre-simulated, but which exist only once.
Yeah. So what we must adapt the certification process,
yes,
so that it could work with the models we build and actually certify not only the material but also the use of them in this particular construction.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that we as architects and as builders and engineers and roboticists know that we are building according to the certification process, which is actually just a set of best practices. We know that this is a good way of building buildings that are resistant to fire or resistant to earthquakes or whatever.
Yes, it's basically just a shift from another, let's say, rather static definition to a more dynamic definition. And I think this is a general tendency that we have today with, let's say, in the digital age, that we start to have more and more, let's say, dynamic processes. Those are also the processes that need to be get new standards and certifications.
Yeah, because this is something I think that roboticists are not very used to working with, because we don't work out there in this. Our industrial robots that we used to design, they worked in a very closed cell. If somebody just came close, it just shut down and that was it. These robots has to work with people, and the result that they produce has to be work has to work for people.
Yeah, you know, we had a very hard time to with the, let's say, robotic machineries that we bought, to explain to people that we, each time we build something, we build it differently, right? And we would also like to have people sometimes intervene in the building process, etc. This is really something the robotic industry, at least, is really not used to. I think in research we are a bit further, but I think those concepts also need to become a reality. And I'm very positive that those concepts will become a reality. And this is going to be a very exciting future, I think, for architecture and for robotics.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see us as a roboticist. It's going to be interesting to see the work site, see all the robots work. And of course, somebody that has a house. And I enjoy architecture. I'm not an architecture buff or anything, but it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of signature buildings, what cathedrals of Chartres are we going to build with this new technology. And I hope that they're also going to, we as roboticists is going to be able to help you architects create buildings that really enlarges the scope of humanity, because that's what architects do. They provide space for us to do whatever we need to do.
Well, we very much welcome every help in the field. And I think I'm looking forward to really, let's say, great future research prospects. And I'm really excited to find out the architectures that will come out from that.
So, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Per.
I'm sure we will be back soon.
Okay, great. Thank you. Looking forward to that.
And that's it for today. As always, you can access background information, pictures, videos, and transcripts. Link to our episodes on our website at robotspodcast.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, goodbye. Architecture with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.